Hello, everybody. Danny Raines here again from the Voice of Experience. My gosh, every time I say that, it's just it has strange emotions. I think I just call myself old, but I'm not sure. this edition of the Voice of Experience is going to be dealing with something that linemen do on a day-to-day basis. And I was telling Nick as we were starting this thing this morning, as we sat here and chat for 30 minutes before we ever do this. But back in the day, and I guess I will date myself now, when I started to work there, even when I finally made lineman after about 4.5 years at the time, we had a specifications book. We had a book there that basically outlined everything you were supposed to do, you know, where the poles were in the poles and the hardware goes on it. But it also had one section in there dedicated to reeling span. And guess what? They never taught me. And I think it's a geographical thing. I think it's we lived in the South. We really didn't have a lot of cold weather. So, you know, the sagging tables never were a big issue. So, well, anyway, after a few years, I made lineman in 72, I think it was. And about 73, 74, we started getting up some colder years. Well, things started showing up because we had a bunch of old heads around here then too, worse than I am now. This is the way it is, son. This is what we do here. Don't ask any questions. Just do as I say. And we would, you know, the old saying, and I'm sure most linemen's heard it at least once, is get all you can and then get three more clicks and don't lose anything when you make it up. And that's the way we did it. I don't care whether it was number 2 ACSR or whether it was 795. It doesn't matter. Well, after a while, there was occasions that happened that made believers out of me, especially as I was coming along as a lineman, and then I started doing some, you know, I started doing guest instructor at our training center and whatnot. I started really looking at the spec book more than just construction methods and policies, but then also in the fine print where it went into reeling span and sagging, proper sagging of conductors. And then I found out just what the effect temperature has on aluminum ACSR and triple AC wire. And then I'm going, okay. Light bulb went off. And now then, you know, I said, I think we need to start doing this. So I don't, by the time I had made foreman, I went to Jonesboro and I had the training crew there. And I spent first, every time I would get three new apprentices every 6 months. And turned out some really good linemen, and some of them right now are foremen and supervisors, and even some of them may be retired now, like me. But, you know, that's where I really put a lot of emphasis on this, and it was a result of some things that happened to me as a lineman before I ever made foreman. You learn by mistakes. Just now, what I try to do in today's world is try to keep people from making mistakes. And that's what I try to share with you. This works and this don't. There was a time, and I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but I was still living in Macon, Georgia. I was still a lineman. And we basically, I think it was probably 81 or 2, somewhere along in there, 83. The Christmas weekend of that year of 83, we had a very bad cold snap, and it got down to almost zero, which was unheard of. And, of course, you know, besides freezing water pipes all over the place and busted water pipes, we had poles falling. We had all kind of stuff happening. And then the next year, I think we went down to about 6 below 0, which was absolutely incredible. I know I got called out about 11 o'clock at night. Said, well, the whole world's falling down around us, because he'd gotten down pretty close to zero by then. And by the time we got all the buckets and shoot the buckets, wouldn't even hardly work because the hydraulic fluid, you know, then was not what it is now. So it didn't work so well when it got down to zero. But I can remember a couple of occasions in that time period where it was bad. The first call I had was in Macon, was out on what we call Cornfield Road, Highway 49 South, going out of Macon toward Byron. And I went out there, and some contractors had pulled in some 750 at that time. We didn't use 795. We had 750 triple FT. So they had pulled it in and sagged it too tight, which we knew. The supervisor that was over and the construction coordinator over those contractors, this is the way he wanted. He told the contractors, he said, that don't look good. Sag it tighter. Got it tighter, tighter. Probably sagged it on a hot summer day, about a 95-degree day in Macon, and sagged it about 2,000 pounds. Well, let me tell you what happens to it when you do that. We got out there. The breaker was locked out in the substation. The whole circuit was out. So here we go. We're striking out. We go out there, and here's a set of 1,200-amp gain switches, okay? And the wire has literally pulled the gain switch apart. Pieces of the gain switch were laying on the ground. The wire, both sides, where it had been deaded in on the switch rather than on the pole, it just literally pulled it apart. And I'm going, holy moly. And I remember there was a lineman, his name was Johnny Bell, and I'm not sure where he's at now, if he's still here. He and I were up there trying to put this stuff back together, and it's 6 below 0. And I never will forget Johnny's, you know, old habits are hard to break. We weren't used to this kind of stuff. And Johnny reached up there, of course, you know, gloves, and he pulled the Carter key out of a set of disc insulators, bales, we call them. And what we normally do when we do that Carter key, we don't lay it down because it's kind of hard. You know how it is, hard to pick back up. So what do you do with it? Sticks it between his lips. And I saw what he was about to do, and I hollered at him. I said, don't do that. And bless his heart, he looked at me real funny, but he had it in his lips. He went to pull it out, and it had frozen and pulled all the meat right off it. Wherever it was touching his lip, he didn't have any skin on it anymore. And I said, oh, my gosh, well, that's going to leave a scar for sure. At the same time all that was going on, you know, we had to come down in the middle of the night and basically take warming spells, and then the trucks wouldn't work. I mean, we had to run the trucks and get the hydraulic fluid hot. It was just a mess. And then I heard another crew that was out on the off of Mosley Dixon Road, Lake Tobosoffke, in on the west side of town. And they got out there. They had a pole down call. I heard them when they dispatched it. And they got out there. And sure enough, there was what we call a C suspension pole. It was a vertical suspension. And this was 397, but it was not triple AC. It was ACSR. It had a steel cord. And it had shrank so much in the cold. And of course, when you're framing that pole on the backside of that pole, you got guys going to the ground, but you also have a 4x4 curved washer that goes behind to back up the bales to keep the bolt from pulling through the pole. And I never will forget, I heard Ed Lunsford when he got out there, he says, the 4x4 washers on this pole pulled through the pole, split the pole in two. I'm going, good Lord. Well, anyway, those were the kinds of things that just made believers out of me. And I'd been a lineman for 10 years, but nobody had ever really, you know, communicated the importance of proper sagging and finding out what a ruling span is, you know. And then when I started as an instructor for a training crew, and then I said, okay, you need to get the span measurements and then divide it by the number of spans, get your ruling span, look at your temperature, and then look at the sagging chart. If you follow that procedure, you'll usually come out pretty good. It works very well. Well, you know, then the apprentices that were coming along, they had come up from winch truck operator and crew equipment operator and things of this nature and helpers. And so now then they were apprentices, and they too, again, said, nobody's ever told us this. And I said, well, believe me. And there's been other occasions too when this happened all over the country, really, but basically another instance there that I never will forget. I was on call when I was supervisor in Jonesboro. I was on call. I lived in Stockbridge. And of course, when the station operated up there, I could see the voltage dip at my house. I was on one circuit and there's three other circuits there. You could see the little short blink if you looked close, and you knew something was going on. Another breaker on another circuit had operated, maybe locked out. Well, anyway, I was sitting there about 8:30 one night, 8:30, 9 o'clock at the house, and entertaining family, and I was on call, and the DO called me, the division operator called me and said, you need to head toward the station, you got a breaker locked out. And I said, okay. So I got dressed, and it wasn't that cold, though. It was probably 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So I got in the company truck, and here I go. I strike out to the substation. Before I got to the substation, he called and said, well, I think we know what it is. Said there's wire down in the road at a certain location. And sure enough, it was. Well, I knew I'd seen it. It's Eagles Landing Parkway and Highway 42. Contractors, again, had just pulled in brand new 750. And that was a dead-end pole. That was a junction pole. It was running straight through up and down north-south on Highway 42. And there was a pull-off going down Eagles Landing Parkway back toward I-75. And I said, well, they just got through sagging that. I said, I wonder. And sure enough, by the time I got to the location, I got there just in time to see a tractor truck, and the phase was still hot. Run over a hot 14-4 phase, because this is 25 kV. And, of course, it blew up and fired up. But when we went to sag the wire back up, we got a clearance and outage and grounded everything and started doing what we were doing to pick it up and correct it and get it back on after we switched the circuit up. And we got up there, and the wire, it lacked probably 18 inches getting back to the dead end. And think about that. Now, the span links, the span links were only 200. We didn't allow span links to go over 250 feet with 750 because of the weight itself, the vertical weight. And, you know, it lacked 18 inches getting back to the pole. And so the lineman was there. Well, Danny, what are you going to do? You want to splice? I said, no, you don't want to splice it out, because when the temperature comes up, it's going to sag back down. We're probably going to have another case of trouble. I said, just add some bells to it right now, some disc insulators, and, you know, we'll fix it later. You know, we'll come back tomorrow before it really has a chance to get in trouble again when it warms up, and we'll resag it. So we did. We added some disc insulators to it and just put a mechanical jumper on it for the night. Got it up out of the street, got it back where we could make it back hot again. Covered the other faces up, you know, right there at the pole, just in case, left some guts on them. That way, if anything did sag down, at least it'd be mid-span. It wouldn't be right there at the pole. So, but that was just another occasion, you know, where improper sagging had led to a really nasty event. Never been of that can be prevented by using sagging charts and using a dynamometer. Well, I got to looking around when I got all the apprentice training crew, you know, and I said, where's the dynamometers at? And I remember Stan Scarborough, that was my supervisor. He was a district supervisor at Jonesboro District. He said, what are you looking for? I said, a dynamometer. What are you going to need it for? I said, to figure out if it says 1,150 pounds or 1,200 pounds sagged at, you know, 58 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, for this particular size wire. I said, we need a dynamometer to put in there to sag it. Well, nobody even had one. And I'm going, boy, this is really good. Well, that's the way it was back in the day. And as I said again, I'll date myself and just say that's the way it was at that particular time. Well, later on in that segment, when I was the supervisor of that training crew, G.W. Young, which was then supervisor of the crews, gave us a job, and I never forget it was a pretty neat job. We were going to cut in a brand new substation, and so he gave me the print, and I looked at that, and I said, "Well, we don't do substations," but he said, "I got to have 3 750 circuits out of there," and I said, "Oh, okay." Because that, well, basically we're splitting load up. That part of the district near Atlanta had grown industrial and commercial to where now then there was too much load for the system that was currently there. So they built 115 to 25 kV ground station right there, and we pulled 3 circuits out, tied all 3 of them back to different circuits, in different places, and we took load off of the existing circuits and then put it into the new substation. Well, that was an adventure for those 3 apprentices, and I'm sure they still talk about it today, because I told them, I said, "Guys, here's what I'd like to do. This right here is going to be a marker. This is going to be a testimony to the training crews themselves, to show the world that apprentices can do this work as well as linemen can. You got to learn how to do it somewhere." So we set up at the station, and we pulled 3 circuits out to the poles right outside. One went one way, one went the other, and one went straight out. Well, the one that went east was an underbuild on 115 kV transmission line. So here's the steel poles, concrete and steel on those, but we had to set wood poles, CCA wood poles in between, because those transmission structure spans, 1,000 feet, 1,200 feet. So we had to add a couple of poles in every one of the spans to, balance it out. The problem we had, and this is, I gave the apprentices, and I told them, I pointed it out to them up front. I said, "Now here's something you're going to remember, I hope, in the future." It went out of the substation, and it was probably a mile, right at a mile. We had to make 2 pulls on that, and we only had about 5,000 feet on a reel of 750. So we had to make 2 pulls to get to where we needed to go to dead it in. The problem was, when we come out of the station, it was pretty level. Then it went up a hill. Well, there was a long part of the pull on one side of the hill and a short part on the other. Anybody that's ever sagged wire right now knows what I'm fixing to say, I hope, is that when you have that imbalance on span lengths and distance, you got to sag it from both ends. Well, when I told those apprentices, I said, "You got to sag it on both ends, because if you sag it on the short end, you're going to have slack wire on the long end. If you sag it on the long end, you're going to have it so tight on the short end, it's not going to be at the same tension." And they looked at me real funny. And I said, "Just put the dynamometer on there and tell me what you see." Well, we did the ruling span. We did what the book said. And we said, "Well, here you go. This is the sagging chart said we need to have, about, I think if I remember right, it was 1,150 to 1,200 pounds, somewhere like that, at the sagging point. Well, if you'd done that, the long span would have been like this. It wouldn't been pretty. So we just did a little adjustment. We added about 10%. We added 150 pounds of tension to that sagging point. And then I said, "Okay, let's sag this. This is going to be your initial sag. We'll go down to the other end and see what this looks like. We may have to put a dynamometer on there and either pick up or slack off. We're probably going to have to slack off, because they sagged it on the long end." So we went to the other end, and sure enough, we had to put some slack back in it. And we let it sit overnight, for the initial span, and that way it evens out temperature-wise and length. And once you get the initial span set in there, then you can go back and put the dynamometer on there one more time and get it right. and then dead it in, start clipping the wire in. You're ready to make it hot and then transfer the load. Well, those three apprentices, the lineman, I had a crew leader and a lineman, and I had three apprentices. That was the crew. And it was myself as the supervisor. The lineman and the crew leader, I don't think ever got in the truck. By the time I had gotten those apprentices and we had gotten those apprentices to the end of their 6 months, and that's about where we were at when we built this job, they were self-sufficient. They were doing journeyman lineman work. They worked a bucket every day, did all the cover. They did everything. And I personally was very proud of the job they did. And I was actually in Jonesboro. Now, this probably was 1987. I said, do the math. That's 37 years ago. You go there now, and that wire is still there, still 750 triple AC, and it still looks good. It's still sagged correct. Another thing was guying. You know, a lot of people on a three-phase dead end just put, you know, two guys on a pole and expect it to stay there. And I said, well, as long as nobody else does anything to it, it probably would. And then when telephone comes in and pulls the gut out of the middle of the pole, bows pole in the middle, it's going to look like crap. So I always was a firm believer because of something Jim Swift told me 100 years ago. He said, if you can't guide, you can't pull it. So if you got a wire up there, it needs a guy on it, especially if it's big wire and long spans. So I put four guys on a dead end. I put one into neutral. And you know those poles, and then they come in there and pull this big old 500 pair of cable since then. Of course, now it's fiber. But the pole's still straight, too. There's no bow, no bend, no nothing. It's still there. And some of those poles have been changed out, of course, but the wire's still sagged correctly. And the guys are still there where we put them. And that, you know, very important to me is to have young apprentices trained the correct way. And just looking at the spec book and looking and understanding, you know, if you got a 250 to 275 foot span of 750 wire, triple AC wire, you get your ruling span and you figure out, is it 1,200 pounds or whatever? It's not 2,000 pounds, I can tell you that, because if it ever goes to zero, it's coming, something's going to break. It's just not designed to hold that much weight. But you can look in the IAEI magazine, and it also has some good information on sagging in there. Most companies that I work with now, you know, on demand and by request, has their own sagging charts and tables in there. And that's based on, you know, the engineering specs of the span links and everything there that's supposed to be done the right way to make it work. Now, I will admit, and last thing, and of course, I always tell people, you know, if you put a 4-0 ACSR neutral in underneath 750 or 397 or whatever, 795, and you don't sag it correctly, especially if the wire gets close to the end of the reel and it's on the short end of the curls, you're going to see the wire rolling in the spans, which is not pretty. And I always said, if you guy it properly, you can add 10 or 15% sag to it and get those curls out of it, make it look a whole lot better. And I think most linemen will agree with me that's an accepted practice. You're not going to overstrain the pole. If you guy the pole properly, and you know, as long as you go by those sagging charts and tables, you're going to be okay. But anyway, that's just another one of the Voice of Experience articles. This is in, I'm not sure which edition. I just turned in the next article for the next edition. And it has to do with, and I'll go ahead and give you a plug now. I had a lot of people call and say, well, Danny, how long does it take to make linemen? I said, well, then or now. Because basically, if you look at the Department of Labor, they say one thing. And if you look at the history, my history, because of economics back in the 70s when I made linemen, I actually stayed apprentice an extra 7, 8, 9 months, almost a year, because of economy problems back. And it was all they had to do with plant hatch, the first nuclear plant Southern Company, George Pirate ever built. But anyway, that was another problem. But if you look at today's standards, I mean, that's sad but true. There's some low time journeyman linemen out there. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about this on the next Voice of Experience. But a certificate from a vocational technical school or a lineman college doesn't mean that you're a journeyman lineman. It just means you have proven yourself to the point to where you can now learn what it takes to be a lineman. So that's the next edition that's coming out. Now then, last thing on the agenda before I run out of time here, because it's about used up my 30 minutes, is that in, I think, May 21st through the 23rd in Orlando, Florida, we're going to have the spring incident prevention workshop. And I'm really looking forward to going down there and seeing everybody one more time. We do it 2 times a year. And San Diego in the fall, and now we're back in Florida here in the spring. And I will be putting on 2 presentations. One of them that I love to do is a root cause analysis and accident investigation. And as much as I do with in the world of testifying and being deposed and legal cases, civil cases, all kinds of stuff, you know, that's that got to be very important to me, and I had to get my ducks in a row. And so I put together a series of incidents and accidents, and I actually will get you involved in the class on how to, what questions do you need to ask? Where I'm going to give you the basic fundamentals. You tell me what I need to know, or you discover it. And that's the key to the whole thing. Also, we're going to go back and do one of my favorite and one of the most demanded and requested, you know, is distribution cover-up, proper system cover-up, and the history of it. In other words, how did we get to where we're at today with cover-up? How did we start? What was the first thing we started doing? And, you know, why do we do it the way we do it today? Well, that is going to be an interesting program, because a lot of people are not doing it correctly. And I'll tell you a lot of stories, and these are true stories. Now, I'm a storyteller, and I teach by illustration, and I don't apologize, because I use human activity to prove my points. The last thing is my buddy and comrade at arms, Jim Vaughn, and I will have a roundtable on system operations and system grounding, I think on a Wednesday. I'm not sure. Usually the second day when we do that. But we usually have 125 to 150 people in the room. And we'll sit up there in the front of the room, and we'll try to answer the questions that's thrown at us from every part of the country and in the United States. Co-ops, you know, investor-owned utilities, municipals, contractors, the whole nine yards. But we'll try to give you the answers that you really want. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody. And I'm going to end up and wrap up now and turn it back over to Nick. Thank you so much for being attentive and listening. I hope it helped a little bit, my little storytelling. Have a great day. Be safe, and we'll see you next time.
Let safety shine by joining us for the IP Utility Safety Conference in Orlando, Florida, this May 21st through the 23rd. Register today at IPUtilitySafetyConference.com.
Expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Utility Business Media and its employees. It is strongly recommended that you discuss any actions or policy changes with your company management prior to implementation.